What happens when an entire generation starts dying younger than their parents? In 2015, two Princeton economists uncovered something that shouldn't exist in modern America. Middle-aged white people without college degrees were dying at increasing rates, not from cancer or heart disease, but from suicide, drug overdoses, and alcohol-related liver disease. This wasn't a blip. Between 1999 and 2017, roughly 600,000 Americans died these deaths of despair, a death toll rivaling the entire AIDS epidemic. While other wealthy nations continued their steady march toward longer lives, America broke the pattern. The mortality reversal didn't strike everyone equally. It carved a brutal line through American society based on a single factor: whether you held a bachelor's degree. For the 62% of Americans without one, life expectancy began moving backward, an occurrence unprecedented in peacetime modern history. What caused this quiet catastrophe unfolding in plain sight? Picture two escalators side by side. Until 1970, both moved upward together, lifting Americans of all education levels. Then one accelerated while the other stalled. By 2017, middle-aged Americans with bachelor's degrees were three times less likely to die from alcohol, drugs, or suicide than their non-degreed counterparts. Among those without degrees, 13% reported being unable to work, up from 4% in 1993. Among college graduates, the rate held steady at 1-2%. High mortality spread across West Virginia, Kentucky, Arkansas, Mississippi, then into Maine, Upper Michigan, and parts of Texas, places where good jobs vanished and communities hollowed out. This divide reversed historical patterns. A century ago, educated people faced higher suicide risk. For whites born in 1945, suicide rates looked similar regardless of education. For those born in 1970, the gap yawns wide and widens further with each generation. By 2017, deaths of despair claimed 158,000 American lives annually, equivalent to three fully loaded Boeing 737s crashing daily. The opioid crisis alone killed more Americans than both world wars combined. By 2012, doctors wrote enough opioid prescriptions for every American adult to have a month's supply. Companies like Purdue Pharma marketed OxyContin as safe and non-addictive, maximizing profits while downplaying risks. People don't seek oblivion when their lives feel meaningful. When the Soviet Union collapsed, Russian life expectancy plummeted as alcohol consumption soared. Men lost 6 years. Russians weren't biologically different. Their social and economic world had disintegrated. Geography matters too. Madison County, Montana, with just 2.1 people per square mile, has four times the suicide rate of densely populated New Jersey counties. Isolation compounds despair. What unites these three causes isn't the substances themselves, but what drives people toward them: lives stripped of meaning, purpose, and hope. Pain connects social distress, labor markets, and the opioid epidemic in surprising ways. Your brain processes social pain, rejection, exclusion, loss through the same neural pathways as physical injury. Heartache and crushing aren't metaphors. They describe real neurological experiences. Middle-aged Americans now report more pain than the elderly, an unusual reversal. Pain geography maps almost perfectly onto deaths of despair: higher in Appalachia, the South, and rural West, lower in the North Central Plains and Northeast. Areas with higher Trump votes in 2016 show higher pain levels. In some rural counties, 40% of residents report chronic pain. Neither obesity nor occupational changes fully explain this pattern. Obesity rates among Americans without college degrees climbed from 20% to 30%, but weight accounts for only a quarter of increased pain reports. The economy has shifted from physically demanding manufacturing towards service work, not toward more strenuous labor. This hints at something profound. The destruction of working-class communities may directly cause chronic pain. When social networks dissolve and support systems erode, the body keeps score. Social exclusion activates the same brain regions as physical injury. The pain is real, even when medical scans show no tissue damage. Education has become America's great sorting mechanism, but meritocracy creates winners by creating losers. When talented young people escape struggling communities for college and careers, they drain those areas of leadership and potential. Winners view success as personal achievement, while losers internalize failure as individual inadequacy. The college earnings premium doubled from 40% in the 1970s to 80% by 2000. Employment rates diverged similarly. 84% of bachelor's degree holders work compared to 68% of high school graduates. Birth cohort analysis reveals something chilling. For those without bachelor's degrees, each successive generation faces higher mortality risk from despair. The 1970 cohort faces twice the risk at age 45 compared to the 1950 cohort. The Black American experience offers a preview. In the late 1960s, African Americans worked in manufacturing and transportation, industries vulnerable to economic restructuring. Job losses led to social disintegration as successful families moved away, leaving communities stripped of their middle class. This pattern now replicates in white working class areas as talented young people abandon struggling towns for thriving coastal cities. When good jobs disappear, communities unravel. Since 1970, wages for white men without college degrees declined 0.2% annually, while productivity soared 70%. Workers created more value but received less. Prime-age men, 25 to 54, not working grew from 5% in the late 1960s to 14% by 2018. Manufacturing jobs gave way to disengaging service work, healthcare aides, food service, cleaning. Corporate outsourcing created separate worlds where janitors can no longer work their way up because those roles exist in different companies. Outsourced workers are no longer invited to the holiday party. Marriage rates reflect this devastation. By 2018, 75% of college graduates were married versus 62% without degrees. Non-marital births among white women without degrees doubled since 1990, exceeding 40%. Union membership plummeted from over a third of workers in the 1950s to under 10%, erasing both economic representation and social connection. The General Social Survey shows midlife whites reporting they're not too happy has been rising since the late 1990s, driven entirely by those without bachelor's degrees. Education now matters more than race for well-being. American healthcare consumes 18% of GDP, $10,739 per person, yet delivers worse outcomes than countries spending a third as much. U.S. life expectancy trails at least 25 countries, despite nearly double their spending. The money doesn't buy more services, it flows through inflated prices. Doctors earn nearly twice their international counterparts, with specialists making $400,000 to $800,000 annually. Pharmaceuticals cost three times more. Insulin costs 10 times what it does abroad. The healthcare industry deploys 2,829 lobbyists, over five per Congress member, spending $567 million annually to block reforms, killing the single-payer option in Obamacare. These costs suppress wages and replace full-time positions with part-time work to avoid benefits. Solutions exist. Universal coverage could improve outcomes while increasing take-home pay. Reviving unions would shift power toward workers. Regulating harmful practices, preventing outsourcing to cut benefits, outlawing non-compete clauses offers immediate relief. Germany's apprenticeship programs foster pride among non-college workers, while America wastefully prepares everyone for college when only a third succeed. These deaths aren't inevitable consequences of trade and technology. They reflect policy choices prioritizing profits over people. The question isn't whether democracy can meet this moment, but whether we'll act before more communities unravel.